It's the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM, Domino and Cellini in conversation with a guy who lived through The Last Dance. Michael Wilbon joining us on the Loud Security Systems newsmaker line from ESPN, writing a piece following each and every Sunday on the undefeated ESPN.com as well. You can follow him at Real Mike Wilbon as well on Twitter. Michael, always a pleasure having you on the program. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Watched last week you on with Scott Van Pelt after episodes 3 and 4. It was funny that you said you were watching it with your 12-year-old son, and he was watching the Pistons and Bulls saying, that's a foul, that's a foul, that's a foul. These guys would have been out of the league talking about some of the Pistons if it were today's NBA. And that was, I think, one of the most amazing things to take out of episodes 3 and 4.
Well, it is the difference in style for people who, you know, just maybe 40 years old, and they've been watching the NBA since they were 12 or 15. It hasn't looked like that in some time. And even then, I mean, that was kind of extreme, it seemed. The funny thing was he kept saying, Dad, that's a flagrant foul. That would be a flagrant two. And I'm like, dude, you got to watch this differently. He's a 12-year-old basketball head, and he's used to the way the game is played and officiated. And, of course, that stuff was so dramatically different back then, which is why I tell people sometimes when they say, you know, what would happen now and, you know, these players are so much more athletic and what would LeBron and KD do? And I'm like, well, the first thing they have to do is get used to being slammed to the floor when they come down the lane in a playoff game. And they're not used to that. So it was a different culture, totally different game. Everything about it was, as you can see from the footage then, is different.
Yeah, we had Charles Barkley on yesterday, and he actually talked about what would be funny is they should get three officials and sit them down in a room and let them watch a couple of these games to try to determine what actually would be. And you know, our line was basically the back end of the bench would get a lot more time than they normally got because they'd be in basketball games as guys got chucked out left and right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people would have, you know, 5 fouls in the first half. And it, you know, but it's so funny, the fascination with a period that was now, I mean, not just The Last Dance, which was 22 years ago, but with that Bulls team that sort of evolved in the late 80s and 90s. We're talking about 30 years ago in some cases. When the Bulls lost that 7-game series to the Pistons, that was 1990. We're coming up on a 30-year anniversary of that, and yet it resonates. I mean, people look at it, and something about it has great appeal to them even now.
Michael Wilbon with us on the Loud Security Systems newsmaker line. As Chris said, Michael, we talked to Charles Barkley yesterday, and I think we all stand in agreement. The one thing that stood out was the mental toughness, physical toughness as well of Michael Jordan. He got knocked around, and he never complained. He just dealt with it.
Well, you know, that was the way playoff series were played then, and they were sort of – that was the I guess that provided like a crescendo and an end to it. Play was rugged after Michael left. I mean, that the later 90s, early aughts, it was sort of, the game was sort of ugly up. And then the league said, that's it. We're not having that. And so the game evolved. The rules changes evolved. The three-point shot changed spacing on the floor and therefore what you could physically do with somebody if you weren't near them. And all of it, but yeah, the physical and mental toughness of all those teams. I mean, listen, the Celtics and Lakers had to go through it versus the Pistons before the Bulls did. I mean, you know, Bill Laimbeer isn't only hated in Chicago. He's hated in Boston and Los Angeles as well. Because we're talking about headlocks and taking guys to the ground head first like it was pro wrestling. There was a lot of series that people could see the footage and they don't. They can go to YouTube and find it of what it looked like a Pistons-Celtics series. It was just as rough.
Hey, Mike, talked to Rick Mahorn earlier in the week, and the most amazing thing was we talk about Jordan's mental and physical toughness. Even Larry Bird, who would trash talk but would keep his cool on the court, even he lost his cool against Bill Laimbeer and those Pistons teams. That was their goal, to get under your skin, and Michael, I think, figured that out pretty quickly.
Well, I don't know about pretty quickly. They lost to him 3 times.
they lost to him, but Michael always
games,
kept
six
his wits.
Games and seven.
Yeah.
I don't know that he. I don't know that I'm going to agree that he always kept it. The Bulls. It was a process, and it took a while. When you lose to somebody 3 straight times, no, Michael didn't always keep his. And what he realized after the second loss, the third loss, the one that was in 7 games to the Pistons for the Eastern Conference Championship. What Michael learned as a leader too was, okay, we're going to go back to Chicago. We're not going to go on vacation. We're going to go back and get ready for the Pistons physically and mentally. And that's when they got past them. You know, Laimbeer, Mahorn and Joe Dumars, these were great defensive players, Isaiah. They wanted to get under your skin. Lane Beer was a thug, and he played like it, and he tried to hurt people, and there's a difference. And, you know, and just talking to people in Detroit and talking to some of the Pistons on those teams, John Sally, the two guys who wanted to hurt you, Lane Beer won. And then Rodman was sort of following whatever Lane Beer's lead was back then, initially anyway. And Lane Beer wanted to hurt people, and he tried to hurt Bird. He tried to hurt McHale, and this was his MO. And that's why he is sort of on a separate island when it comes to these things. Now, you listen to people, and I know I've talked to players on those Bulls teams. They don't hate all the Pistons players. They don't. Sometimes they play together. Remember, Jordan had Sally, Rodman, and Buddha Edwards join him in Chicago and help win championships. So it wasn't everybody. But Lane Beer is just sort of out there on the island because he's the one who's doubled down now on saying he'd do everything the same way again. And Lane Beer, again, I'm saying this advisedly, he did thuggish things on the basketball court that were still to this day not forgiven by a lot of opponents. And again, not just the Bulls.
Hey, Mike, one of the things historically that I think is going to come out of this is I didn't think in my lifetime I would ever see Michael Jordan sitting back in a chair relaxing, being as open and honest as he was. We waited a long time. I mention this because I think it was Bill Russell's kids who finally said, why do you keep letting everybody tell your story? Why don't you tell your story? And Bill Russell came out, and at least he did a few more things. I didn't think I'd see Michael relax, cigar in hand, dropping F-bombs. I never thought I would see this.
Well, not on TV, not on camera.
Right.
No, you didn't. And, you know, for those of us who've had a little bit more access to him, that's been the thing that you wanted to see more of because we did see it, because we knew it was there. Because we knew Michael is a great storyteller long before now. People are just finding that out because he did it on camera. And in his case, you know, the director, Jason, said to him, well, apparently, when Michael would always say, people are not going to understand. They're not going to get this. And he said, okay, here's your chance to make them get it. Here's a chance to make them understand. And Michael, at this point, 20-some years later, after this footage was vaulted, said, okay, I'm gonna try this. And I you know, I wonder how he's feeling about it like right now, four episodes in. And but yeah, he's a great storyteller. There's few things that are more captivating than Michael Jordan wound up telling stories about his time in the NBA or going back and forth with guys that he has known for a long time about. You know, I would sometimes say that I thought the 92 team with Horace Grant that won 67 games was better than the 96 team that set the record with 72 games at the time with Dennis Rodman. And Michael would say, are you crazy? And he'd go into a thing. And it's great. It was just great to see. And you say, can I write about this? No. People aren't going to understand this going back and forth. I think now they do understand. I think he's finding out. I hope he's finding out they do understand.
But I think
and it is of great value.
We had Jason Hare on, and I think one of the things he pitched to Michael was, we're going to have enough time to let you actually tell the story. If you did this in an hour,
yeah,
then we can take a cut or a clip or out of context. I think the idea over a multiple of interviews, and it was probably like that season when they had the cameras around. We asked him, was there a stiffness? When you watched all that video, was there a stiffness in the beginning? And then all of a sudden at the end, he said Michael's sitting in there with a cigar in his hand in the locker room getting ready to go out and warm up. He would never have done that in the beginning of the year. So I think the opportunity to let this story breathe probably let Michael know that he was going to be able to tell more of his own story instead of somebody else telling it.
Well, yeah, if the whole point is to make people get it, it's not happen in 5 minutes. It's not going to happen in sound bites. It's not going to happen in an interview. You know, he was going to get the chance to sit and let this percolate. And so, yeah, I mean, all that went into the calculation of whether or not he was going to get people to get it, to understand what it is that he wants people to understand. So, yeah, I mean, that and still it took years. But also, you didn't see that Michael in 1988. The Michael you see in 19, even now, of course, sitting there, you know, in his home telling these stories, you saw more of that guy in 1998. And then with the Wizards and after that, you saw that person emerge, just as you would see anybody emerge when they're in their late 30s and 40s and 50s as opposed to their 20s.
Michael Wilbon with us writing stories for The Undefeated on ESPN.com the day after, the Mondays after the Last Dance episodes air. You can check him out as well on Twitter at Real Mike Wilbon. Anything stand out to you as far as a surprise, anything you didn't realize after watching the first four episodes?
Yeah, I mean, we all knew of the tension between Jerry Krause, the general manager, and Phil Jackson, but I never knew that Jerry Krause said to Phil Jackson, had the nerve to say to him, you can go 82-0 next year, you're not coming back. And for what? So that his ego could be satisfied so he can get, oh God, what's the name of the Iowa State coach at the time?
Tim Floyd.
Tim Floyd. Are you kidding me? I mean, again, we knew of the tension. We didn't. I don't think many people knew. Maybe the people who covered the team on a daily basis, the Chicago beat writers, knew that it was that intense. So no, we didn't know that and didn't realize it. I didn't realize it in real time at the time that Michael understood that he had to come to understand the hard way that the culture of the country then, when he was in his early 20s, was a drug culture largely. And whether it was Wall Street or, you know, the NBA, he was thrust into a situation at a pretty young age where before he could get the attention of people to practice harder and pay attention in more detail, he had to deal with guys coked up on his own team. And so him telling that story, I mean, should it be surprising? No, because, again, that's what the world, and particularly the United States, were going through in the 1980s and the mid-80s. But Jordan's realization of it and how to navigate it, that was new to me.
Yeah, I don't want to compare apples to oranges or apples to dishwashers, but if you really think about it, because this is the part that you did live through, you weren't covering them every day, you were working. But the idea that an indoor soccer league team was outdrawing the Chicago Bulls, and think about this. The Bulls were in a place that the New England Patriots were in. You could claim they were the worst organization in their entire league, and the turnarounds are incredible.
Well, the you know, we also went into an age of modern marketing, and they had just superior marketing. A guy named Steve Shanwald, who I got to know really well, who understood selling the team. But you know what? The Bulls actually weren't. They were sort of like the Patriots before the modern, the craft ownership in the modern era. They also got to a Super Bowl or two. And the Bulls didn't get to a finals, but they came close. They were in conference finals. They could not get past either Kareem or Wilt back when big men ruled the NBA. The Bulls had Hall of Famers, Jerry Sloan and Bob Love and Chet Walker and Norm Van Leer. They couldn't get past them. And then they had a couple of bad years that where you saw the attendance figures just. When I was a kid, the Bulls they didn't pack the stadium all the time, but they were good at well-attended years. By the time Jordan got there, it was just, you know, they were on a downer. And again, part of it was because of what people remember. The NBA itself was on the championship round was on tape delay. Magic Johnson played on tape delay against the Philadelphia 76ers when he had one of his great games as a rookie with Kareem out. So that was the whole league, or not the whole. Yeah, let's say the whole league. Most of the league had issues. And but very quickly, the Bulls had no seats available and really haven't had any seats available now going on 30 plus years.
Looking forward to the episodes 5 and 6 this week. Michael Wilbon talking about that and more with him from ESPN on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. It's Diddy or Diddy Not when it comes to Horace Grant providing information to Sam Smith and the Jordan Rules. Love the tease going into this week.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I certainly read the Jordan Rules. I know the controversy it caused at the time. I have zero idea. Only he and Sam Smith. He's talking about a person who worked for the Washington Post for 30 years and got to know Bob Woodward as a mentor and big brother. And if nobody knew who Deep Throat was in the day in the culture until the guy passed away, or close to it. You know, Sam Smith knows who his Deep Throat was. I don't know that anybody else knows that.
How quickly inside of circles when Michael walks away, I'm trying to figure it out. How quickly did the whispers start? Oh, David Stern called him into the office, and he told him, you got to get out of here for a little while. I don't remember how quickly that thing started. Do you?
It started immediately. It started immediately. Yeah, I recall, absolutely. And, you know, both people have said on the record that's not the case or wasn't the case. And I don't know how much we're going to – I have not viewed the whole thing. I did not take a peek at the sneak previews I was provided because I wanted to watch it in real time with my son. And so I don't know how much they get into that. But I know that topic has been brought up and squashed by each of them many times over the years. But I don't know how much more of what they're going to entertain. And you guys may know more about that, having talked to Jason recently, as to whether that's going to be addressed in full or not.
Yeah, they're going to talk about it a little bit, according to Jason.
Well, he said it was the money shot.
Maybe more than that. And we've talked about this over the years, Michael, as has everybody else. I believe that there was some smoke to that fire for a while, but as time goes by, somebody would have said something by now.
I say there's no such thing as a two-person secret. My analogy has always been, I don't think you can keep something that big, because if a third person knows it's worth money, it's certainly 15 minutes of fame. There's no such thing as a two-person secret. I don't believe there's ever been a two-person secret in the history of the world.
It's a great point. There must have been some two-person secrets. I don't know that one, because I don't know that it could be. I don't know they could ever start with two people. That starts with the presumption that only two people would be involved. And if something like that, you mean people's lawyers wouldn't be involved?
Well, I'll tell you who else, Michael. True. It's the bookie. I'm telling you who would speak. It's the bookie.
There you have that as well. So you're not talking two people. And I just I didn't believe it. I thought there was too much for the – first of all, I didn't believe it because there's too much for the NBA to lose.
Is it fun to watch it? Yeah, there is. And somehow, some way, it would have been out by now. I was going to ask you about watching it with your 12-year-old. It's got to be fun kind of watching it through his eyes now as well.
Yeah, because he's a basketball fanatic. And you know, he's – while we don't live in Chicago, he's never lived in Chicago. He's a Bulls fan through and through. And – you know, it's just interesting to see him watch it now because some of the characters he's known, you know, just a month or 2 months ago, he was able to meet and interact at length one evening with Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant. And so for him to see it now, you know, and he's been around Scottie a few times, but extensive interaction with them. And so I'm looking at him sometimes and when he doesn't understand something, the first episode, he was like, Dad, does it help that Michael yelled at his teammates like that in practice? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, they won. They won every year. It helped. Yeah, they were with the program. And even when they didn't win two other times, they got to the conference finals. So that was eight trips to the conference finals. Yes, it helped. And it's interesting because kids don't play. They don't get screamed at by their coaches anymore. Yeah. It's a different world we live
in. That's funny. I was going to ask, how did the whole Carmen Electra thing play out in the house then? If he's got questions about that.
Yeah, I don't think he has. He's too young. Luckily, he just turned 12. He's a little too young to understand that yet.
Good for you.
We'll get there.
Luckily. we had a couple of guys over the years. When you do it long enough, people will ask you, some younger guys, or people will say, hey, man, what's different about when you started? I'm 26 years in. Nick, you're about the same thing. Mike, you're even longer than that. My answer has been lately, I'll tell you what's different. I used to get asked to pull up a chair and have a beer with guys after games. That'll never happen again. It's over.
No, I talked to it's off the record conversation, so I won't. I'd like to mention who it is, but a Hall of Fame player everybody knows, and he's only been out. He's young, relatively speaking, mid 40s. And he said to me recently on a trip that I made, the last trip I made of this NBA season in early March. He said, "Hey, you know what I miss?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "He knows me as a writer first, not as a person who was on ESPN first." And he said, "We don't have the kind of conversations we used to have when you'd come to town. And we just sit around the locker room." Like he said, part of it, players don't even stick around. Nope. So he and another coach and I sat around. We decided to do it afterward for old time's sake. And you're so right about this, the storytelling. I mean, so you think Michael Jordan became like that kind of storyteller like overnight? No, he was in the company of great, great storytellers. And when he was a young player, coaches, and, you know, we sit around, we go out now, and Hubie Brown, it's like we should all pay to a charity to just have Hubie Brown to be in his company after a game for like 2 hours. It's spectacular. The stories are unbelievable. And Jack Ramsey, and I got to be around at ESPN and as a writer, Jack Ramsey and Hubie Brown. And some stories, Jack Ramsey started out a story one night. Dr. Jack Ramsey, the great coach of Portland when they won the championship and coached so many other GM. And he said, okay, I got to tell you the time about the story about me trading Wilt. And you just go, what? And, you know, I knew he had done it. I don't know that I would have had the nerve to ask him. And he was going to tell us a story about trading Wilt. And there were like 15 people pulled up listening to Dr. Jack Ramsey tell his story. It was just great.
Well, it's a master's class.
And players, what's that?
It's a master's class.
It is. It is exactly that. And so that's a bygone era, whether it's no matter what the industry, it's just gone. Like in my newsroom, you know, people aren't around hours after we get done with the show. When we got done with Deadline at the Washington Post in the 80s, even 80s and 90s, and I worked there for 30 years, there was always somebody sitting around telling stories. I mean, Shirley Povich, who was then allegedly retired and in his 80s, might tell a story about talking to Ruth, to Babe Ruth on a train trip from New York to St. Louis.
If you don't stick around for that, you're beyond ignorant.
But, you know, it's a different world, and they don't have that. They go to, you know, Pilates or something. It's just a different world. It's a different world for the athletes, people in media, trainers, everybody. It's the culture. It's not the industry.
Well, we kind of get a taste of what it was like during the Last Dance episodes. 5 and 6 are going to be this week. The Undefeated on ESPN.com. Michael Wilbon, the following Monday, going to write another piece. Follow him on Twitter as well at Real Mike Wilbon. Michael, always a pleasure talking with you. Stay safe. Hopefully we can talk again real soon.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me, and I'm glad people are as fascinated by this as those of us who lived through it and still can't get enough of it. So thank you much.
Hey, Mike, thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care now.
Michael Wilbon on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.